Hello and welcome to Yes Indeed Pod, a podcast about indie tabletop role-playing games where I interview creators about their games, their inspiration, and their theory, process, and practice of game design. My name is Mark Shepherd, a game design enthusiast, role-playing game editor, indie hustler slash promoter, and now apparently also an interview podcaster. You can find me on Twitter at IamFofos and on itch.io at blue-golem-games.itch.io. Today, we're interviewing Federico Sones. Fed is an Argentinian games designer living in London for now. He owns Araucana Media, as well as, like me, being a member of the San Gennaro Co-op. He also works full-time at Modiphius Entertainment. Fed's latest game, Nibiru, delves into themes of memory and identity, nature and artificiality in new and exciting ways. It's available right now via DriveThruRPG and from the Modiphius web store, and those links will be in the episode description. Oh, and I repeatedly mispronounced Nibiru in this interview. Apologies to Federico for that, and thanks also for putting up with it. Now all that's out of my head and into yours, let's talk game design. So today we're interviewing Federico Sones. Hi, Fed.
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah, great, thanks. It's quite exciting to be recording this podcast. I hope we're going to have a good chat. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we can get talking about Nibiru properly.
Okay. I'm basically an Argentinian games designer. I moved to the UK about like 5 years ago. So most of my life living over there and now here. I come from like a family of musicians. So art has always been like basically everywhere and literally because like my house was used as like a music school for a long time. So yeah, like I have a pretty extensive like artistic background. I initially came to like London because I wanted to study acting, but I ended up doing games.
Like all the best people, yeah.
Yeah.
That's quite a journey. That's cool. Mm-hmm. Your company is Araucana Media?
Araucana Media. That's basically what I do outside of work. My day job is at Modiphius Entertainment.
You have a game out at the moment, which is called...
Nibiru.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about Nibiru, and then we can get into a bit more of the setting and the mechanics.
Sure. Nibiru is basically a science fiction game of lost memories. The players take on the role of vagabonds, which are basically amnesiacs lost in this massive space station that is home to millions of people. And they kind of try to find their way in like this new like melting pot of cultures that are generally completely alien to them while trying to recover the memories of their past. So yeah, that's basically the elevator pitch in a way.
That sounds fantastic. And if you haven't seen this book, I seriously recommend picking it up because it is very, very pretty. It's just full of art, very beautiful art at that, and it's very well written. Its layout is absolutely fantastic. So all I can say is definitely go out and pick this game up because it's really, really good. You say it's science fiction. So if you're looking on the scale of where, I don't know, Bulldogs is lighthearted and a little bit silly and irreverent, and at the other end you've got something like, I don't know, Dark Heresy.
Yeah,
and in the middle of that, maybe you've got something neutral like Traveller. Where does Nibiru fit on that in sort of mood and setting?
It's kind of like, it's certainly not grim dark. it's probably in the middle. When it comes to if it's about tone, it lies there in the middle, and it's although it has like a pretty big emphasis on like scientific accuracy and some. Basically facets of the game that are specifically about delving into the hows and whys of how the space station works and how people's lives are conditioned. Like there's that. There's also some kind of like weird and fantasy-ish elements to it, lightly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sort of caught my eye that you have this whole chapter on astrophysics in games, and aside from like half a page in Classic Traveller, I don't think I've seen that before in a sci-fi game. And certainly you don't see it in many games where you see someone taking a scientific magnifying glass to the way that it plays. But I love it. I think it's fantastic. You have this whole concept of gravity in the game and the way that works and makes people comfortable and uncomfortable. And actually that's That's really cool. I can't tell you how much I like some of these mechanics.
Yeah.
Getting down a little bit more into it, I've started applying three basic questions when I get into a game, which I have liberally stolen from others. Who are the characters? What do they do? And how does this engage the players? Looking at Nibiru from through that lens, what kind of characters are they? I mean, you said they're vagabonds, they're amnesiacs, but what does that, how do they interact with the setting?
Well, mostly they tend to go about their business. I think in a way, the stories that you tell in this game are basically kicked off when the first memory arrives, basically when they start to recover those memories. So it could be that they just basically woke up in the space station and they start to remember, or they could have been living there for years and suddenly they see something that triggers that and they start remembering stuff. So the start of the story and the way that the story is driven is essentially as they start to remember. So that's basically the gist of it. They remember, and generally the stories kind of frame them as a sort of like, let's say, marginalized group in a way, in that they do have this kind of like feeling that they're out of place, that comes from the fact that they don't really belong in the station, or at least they feel like they don't belong there. So there is a struggle when it comes to integrating and kind of like finding their place in society, while at the same time struggling with the fact that, well, they don't remember who they were, and they slowly start to kind of like get those memories back.
That's really interesting. Like hearing about like how it's a marginalized group, that sort of clicks with a lot of what's happening with indie RPGs at the moment. Like, how do you kind of reinforce that element of the setting and the characters?
There isn't a specific mechanic to their kind of like social status. I mean, this is mostly a thing that is basically seen in the book as per the way, for example, that we write stories and that story hooks are framed, and how essentially they're, I wouldn't say they're persecuted, but they do kind of have this thing from time to time that they might give away that they have this thing where maybe, yeah, that they don't fit exactly. Yeah, that's what I would say for that.
I think what you're saying is that is the point of the stories you're trying to tell, rather than that's not a side aspect, that's kind of a core. One of the things that I have earmarked for talking about would be the setting in general. Nibiru is set within an enormous space station, and it is exquisitely designed. So you've got a whole chapter on the astrophysics, but I've got to say the maps and the prose, which mix fantasy and hard science, and really it's very wonderful. I really like it. And you've got full color art all the way through the book, and the maps are very evocative of what you're trying to get across. Do you want to talk a bit more about how you align the feel of the settings to the theme of the game?
Yeah, sure. It's a really cool thing that, Olivia Hill, who edited Nibiru and wrote Eidhunt, kind of talks about from time to time about how there is this idea generally in TTRPG design of mechanics and setting and theme, all of these aspects being divorced from one another. And in a way, the way that a lot of the setting material is framed is done in a way that kind of like enhances this theme of memory and remembrance. For example, the settlement that is featured for Antumbra, kind of like this, the core region of the space station, is a city ashore. It is basically a city-state that in the past was this sort of like big imperial power, and that today it has kind of like fallen out of grace. They kind of like this empire crumbled, and it has some sort of identity crisis in its midst. Like there's different factions, some that want to progress into some sort of like new society, the different tenets and values, and the more traditionalist part that is kind of like touting this idea of returning to the days of glory. So there's a very big feel and a very like there's a huge weight in terms of memory in that part of the setting, for example. I also kind of like did a bit of an explanation just a little while back in Twitter when it came to another part of the setting, which is Penumbra. And the fact that in Penumbra, there's this sort of battle of how you tell how the past is framed. Like there's this whole place where there's a lot of like this interaction between colonies and the colonizers of this place that is like more removed in the space station, and how the people from the colonies tell the past of how the place was colonized, and how the colonizers tell that past. So the past and the remembrance of that past becomes some sort of double-edged knife that different factions manipulate in basically to back their own narrative of history and who has the right to what.
Okay, yeah.
That's kind of like examples, kind of like sparse examples of how the setting is built within certain like social and frameworks. Like the conflicts are based many times around the struggles of memory and the past.
It's definitely the feel that it get across, that it's a sort of post-imperialist state that's kind of coming to terms with what it is now, but also trying to hold on to the memories of what it had before.
Yeah, exactly.
Talking about memory, I would say that it's a pretty strong theme throughout the whole game. Most of the mechanics that you set out in the third part of the book deal with these mechanical representations of memories. And this system is very lean in general. I think we said that it's 12 pages of mechanics in a 200 plus page book.
And more or less.
That's very lean. Most of the time you're just taking a handful of dice and rolling them and looking for fours, and that's it, you know, or comparing the total to what your opponent rolls. And there is something like half a page of combat mechanics, and a lot of that is just advice.
Yeah, more or less.
I mean, quite a lot of that is just a warning that combat is very likely to be extremely dangerous for your player characters, and I really like that, actually. Yes. That's a strong thematic reinforcement of what you're trying to get across. I sort of wanted to ask you why you opted to move away from a traditional combat focused model of TTRPGs, because that's very much what people come to TTRPGs for, I suppose. What you've done here is kind of the opposite, and it's very much about memory and healing and emotion.
Well, I think that, I mean, and this is kind of like a jab at the sort of like more Western centric schools of design and how generally a lot of the framing of how narrative progresses in a TTRPG has to do with this sort of like balance of power, and specifically about power exerted through violence. So I wanted to shy away from that because, to be honest, like even when you consider that vagabonds are not at the top of the food chain in any way, generally, it means that if they would want to engage, or they wanted to like come and basically thrive based on their power to exert violence, that wouldn't go well. And it's also the style of play that I just don't like in particular. I think that there's so much in terms of like the actual design space that is unexplored when it comes to solving conflicts in ways that are not about violence. Because that's the other thing. Like I'm not sure if I even framed it by calling it combat. I probably called it violence, because it's just something that it also didn't feel very realistic. Like this idea that you will basically go around the world and keep yourself safe and keep yourself thriving and trying to remember your past by just murdering everything that causes you like some nuisance or something.
For sure,
like that.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah.
That's kind of a take.
That's definitely the sort of thing that you see in a lot of TTRPGs out there. They kind of emulate the model of MMORPGs now, you know, they take what people do in video games and try to make that a tabletop experience. But I think in indie, people are moving away from that. They're saying, well, we have all of these violent video games. We have all of these things that are very much driven by style and graphics and sound effects. And we're moving away to a narrative which tells stories that we want to tell, but telling stories that we want to tell together. And that's, That's definitely something that I feel is a big movement in indie at the moment. On the other hand, what a lot of other RPGs tend to shy away from is the mental aspects of injury and trauma, and that's given a great deal of space and a great deal of detail. In particular, it's relating to memories, capital M memories, both new and old. And there's this excellent ludonarrative elision, if you like, where both players and characters learn about their past at the same time. That is really very wonderful. Can you tell us something about how that works? And if you can, tell us how you came up with that, because I think it's very different to what I think you would normally see.
Memories as like the memory mechanic, let's
yeah.
say. When it comes to like memories, basically what you have is, I wanted to create basically a system that rewards players for putting out their ideas, for writing, basically their ideas or what they feel like writing. I think people just love coming up with ideas for characters. They love writing backgrounds for the characters. So, and it's a very common like occurrence that people would just go by their own and they will just write the background of a character and the story of the character. And I want to kind of like mechanize that and put it in a sort of like framework that would be like, listen, this is going to be the core of the experience. We're going to do this like bit by bit, like this small kind of like memory entries. And essentially, as we do that, I want to start rewarding and kind of like the writing of memories, like these snippets of background. And I want to expand on that. So memories are the main drive of that, of basically just putting down whatever it is that you're writing and that you think about. They kind of have this inbuilt prompt, which is when you're rolling for something, you know what you're rolling about. So maybe it's about, I don't know, doing parkour or something like that. So you kind of have an inbuilt prompt as you do that. And you write that down and you develop the character. And then as you continue to do that, revelations are there to expand the design space or the creative space where you're like, okay, maybe now I'm going to try and write this in rhyme, or maybe I'm going to try to write a longer story across memories. And essentially that's kind of how it works. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I really dig these revelations. They are really well designed. That one about rhyme is I think that's probably my favorite. It's exactly the kind of thing that I would like to do.
Yeah.
Much to my players' chagrin, really. You mentioned to me before that you thought these were very fun to write. Which ones are your favorites?
I think my favorite is probably the one that kind of like has you concoct some sort of like poison made out of your darkest recollections. And the potency of the poison is defined by how many negative memories you've written in the last page. I think like design-wise, that was probably the funnest one to write. And also the one that I think that the one that gets like the weirdest one, which is the one in which you just tear like the journal page and you resurrect someone with those memories, with the memories of that page. That was like very fun to just come up with.
That's very cool. That's very evocative. I like that a lot. It's very interesting to hear how these work. When you playtest this, did these ideas come out? Did you get the rewards that you expect, or did you get something unexpected, which is even more interesting?
I got both. I got people basically just, which is like the best feeling ever. Like if you design games, I think I got people basically talking a lot after the sessions about the possibilities. Maybe if I pick this revelation and you pick this one, we could do this. And oh my God, that would be super weird. That would be like, you're having my memories and I am depositing your memories in this object and stuff like that. And it got really fun.
That sounds really rewarding. I think this game must be quite cathartic to play as a player, because you're writing down ideas about something that your character actually, you don't know whether your character has experienced this. And I'm sure there is, that in some way, there's no way that you can't feedback your own experience into this. And that must be quite intimate to play, quite personal.
Yes.
That sounds as a GM and for a player, it sounds like that would be a very rewarding experience. And the kind of thing that I would like to be able to emulate as a designer is certainly that feeling of, oh, this is just two people having a conversation, but with a whole other group of people as well. You know, that sounds very much like my kind of game design bag.
Yeah. And it's also one of those things that, like, it gives a lot of gravitas to the actual character. Like, it's happened with, like, specifically with, like, longer campaigns, and as a game continues on with time, and you see pages and pages, journal pages, you realize that there's this really big connection between the player and the character, which is another reason why I think it was a good call to kind of, like, get rid of, or at least warn against violence, because there's a lot of, like, attachment, I think, developed over time in Nibiru.
And if you're building up the fourth wall relationship between your character and yourself, suddenly, actually, that's quite scary that your character might die. That's I think that's a really good and very subtle kind of content warning there. You know, maybe don't fight because you might get hurt, and actually that might hurt you. As I said, it's a very leanly designed game in terms of what's written on the page, but there must have been a whole funnel of content that went in to produce this very smart, short and sharp design. Is that your general approach to game design? You come up with a load of ideas and then narrow it down, or are you able to build up the system that you want from scratch?
It's always from scratch, always from scratch, because I think that I'm very lean generally when I'm focusing on building this stuff from the ground up. And I think that one of the privileges of, like, working on your time with, like, your own at your own pace and your own game is that you're not constrained by any sort of, like, preconceived notions of what a game has to have. So you can start being like, hey, like, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do that. I want to communicate this idea particularly. I want to explore this theme. And I'm basically going to, from the ground up, think about how each of the mechanics helps communicate that. And if it doesn't, I'm not going to use it. Because that's another thing. Like, Nibiru does away with, like, combat. It does away with, like, skill lists and attributes. There's so much stuff that I don't use. And in the same vein, like, I think that even by using dice and having kind of, like, this struggle task resolution system, I am compromising a bit. But if I were to design, like, a game that it's about, I don't know, a guild of mountain dwellers that are excavating a mountain and they have guilds or something, I would probably be like, you know what, I'm not using dice. I'm going to use, like, these set of stones that communicate the feel and the theme much better. And I'm going to trade the stones. And if it's about, like, the issues between guilds and trading, it's going to be not about, like, how you can do this or how you may not be able to do that, but you're going to be talking about maybe, I don't know, a system in which you just trade stones and you decide what you want to see happening, and you maybe abstain from using stones and or something like that. Like, I think that's the thing with, like, indie games. You can do whatever you want.
I definitely see what you mean. It's exactly as you said. If a mechanic doesn't feed back onto something that you think the players would find interesting or something that reinforces your setting design, then there's no point having it, because that's not what you're doing. You're not producing a very generic system which can tell hundreds of thousands of different kinds of story. You're focusing on 2, 3, 4 different kinds of story, trying to build stories based on that and based on the setting that you've got, rather than being very generic and, oh, I can tell any kind of story here.
Yeah, pretty much. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think you explained it much better. And also, I really like the sound of this mountain dwelling game with stones. So, you know, maybe make that next.
there's a lot of this that is like, there's a lot of baggage, I think, that designers can consciously get rid of. But at some point, there's a lot of baggage that is unconscious. And even how we frame and think about, for example, something like task resolution. Maybe you don't use dice. Maybe you don't use stones. But if the question is still whether you can do this or not, maybe that's something that's like one of those
like unconscious things that we tend to have, like this this baggage, like that question being like that, and maybe not posing a question what, like, okay, maybe you can do whatever you want in this game, but you get to choose different outcomes, and the way you build your character has to do with the sort of effects that you want to see in the world, given your actions and the way you exert your power, more than whether if you can or cannot. So maybe you use these stones, and because you're building toward using these stones, your actions are going to focus on making the tunnels grow faster. Or maybe because you're building your character to use those stones instead, you're going to focus on the well-being of the community and stuff like that. So I think that, that there's a lot of like deconstruction when it comes to the sort of like tenets of design that we have, which is great to like try and experiment with.
I think that's right. Yeah. We have, as you've said, we've got all this baggage from basically from Gary Gygax and the first generation of Dungeons and Dragons, which is basically you have a GM and you have players and they roll dice and they solve tasks and they exhibit violence and colonialism on things. And as a scene, I think indie has always been against that. And it feels more and more as time goes on. Your game is a game that flies in the face of the notion of what a traditional RPG should be like. So, Fed, both you and I are members of the San Gennaro Co-op. If you, the listener, haven't heard of this, it's a worker co-op of indie game designers. And it's a model that's striving for better rates of pay in the industry. On the whole, I would say that it's pretty wholesome. You've personally been around the industry and the co-op a lot longer than me. Can you shed a little bit of light on the system that we're fighting against?
Yeah, totally.
It's at a certain point, I think that this is kind of like one of those questions that is more of like a high level, kind of like philosophical questions in a way. But to be honest, we have a business model in the industry that is basically tailor-made or has been made on the back of like exploited labor for years, like for a long time. To think about the fact that the people that are in control of like a lot of the big companies are not exactly making like maybe doing the paycheck by paycheck thing, and they're not producing like cheap games at the same time. Like if you've seen the stuff that's been put out for ages in the industries, it's very high production value things. It's one of those things that at a certain point you have to kind of like start to question if it's actually that they can't afford to do this. Or if it's really one of those things that, you know, they should just turn and be like, listen, we're producing these like massive like hardcover pseudo coffee table books, and we're paying ourselves a fat check, while at the same time, you know, I've seen my Twitter feed. It's like choke full of GoFundMes and kind of like campaigns to rescue yet another freelancer or writer in the industry. And to be honest, like seeing what the indie space can do and seeing the margins like from all sides, because I've been like, I have my company, I've done my little side things in the middle. Nibiru is kind of like a halfway thing where it's an indie game, but it has those production costs from like the what you would call, I guess, a AAA game. It's one of those things that like that there's no reason why it couldn't change.
We've made a rod for our own back with these very expensive coffee table games, as you talked about, because now people expect all TTRPGs to look like Dungeons and Dragons, and that's not feasible, you know.
Exactly.
People want indie games to be interesting and innovative, but they also think that they should be beautiful and also that they should cost $15. And that's not an equitable model for anybody to follow with. So it's interesting that we have are both in the co-op, but you do stuff which is aligned to the AAA.
Basically, I guess when it comes to like insight on how everything is kind of working on the different sides of this question, let's say, and it's one of those things where, as you just mentioned, like the same thing regarding the pricing of products, the AAA kind of like the big companies have been pushing for higher quality, at least production quality, in these games, or higher profits, and at the same time for like really low prices for the kind of product that they're putting out. And it's very evident that from all of the corners that they could cut, it's always the freelance writers and the artists.
Well, I think then the best way forward is for us all to join together and form a co-op of indie game designers. So I think that's certainly a model that I think would be good for the future, would be for workers to own what they are producing and for us to all work together and kind of fight back a little bit against the Dutch auction of freelance writing, which is pretty hurtful to everybody. Fed, do you want to tell everybody where they can find your games and where they can find you if they wanted to chat to you and so on?
Yeah, sure. Nibiru, you can find Digital on Itch, Drive-Thru, and the Modiphius web store. And in the Modiphius web store, particularly, you can get the physical stuff for Nibiru. Very important. It's really cool.
You should definitely do that. Yeah, please do that.
Yeah, that's basically it. And if you want to, like, you know, message me, I'm on Twitter. I'm F Sons, so at Foxtrot Sierra Oscar Hotel November Sierra.
Very good.
And yeah, yep. Just send me a message.
Okay. Thank you very much for coming on. Yes, indeed. And I hope to speak to you again soon. Yeah, thank you.
Sure. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much to Federico for the interview. Every single Gorum link and social media handle will be in the episode description too. The next month is Zine Quest 2, a Kickstarter role-playing game event where loads of indie creators are running campaigns to get their games printed to zine format. It's an extravaganza of content and it's set to be a wild ride. To celebrate it, I'll be doubling up on my usual schedule and putting out an interview with a Zine Quester every single week. Next week, I'll be interviewing Matt Bonhoeff, a game designer and artist in the American Southwest. His work is mostly found through Wasteland of Enchantment Games. He also helps organize New Mexicon, a small indie RPG convention in New Mexico. His most recent game, Campfire Memories, is on Kickstarter for Zine Quest 2. This GM-less one-shot game tells stories of a terrible family camping trip and why the characters still cherish the memories of those unpleasant experiences. I'm listed as the editor for this game, and I have to say, it's really cool. Please join us to hear more about Campfire Memories. If you enjoy Yes Indeed Pod, please subscribe wherever you find your podcasts. And of course, reach out to me through Twitter at IamPhophos. That's IamPhophos. I'd love dearly to hear from you. Lastly, music credits. All music is from BitQuest by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com and PhilMusic.io. Thanks, Kevin. Until next time, remember, does indie need you? Yes, indeed.